It's time now for Green Visions, a KUMD production to encourage green thinking and green actions. Green Visions is made possible by All Energy Solar, a full-service solar installer in the Twin Ports, and by the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future. The Remedial Action Plan for the St. Louis River Area of Concern is ready for comments, and folks that have been following the work on the St. Louis River are encouraged, as well they might be, because of all of the great strides that have been made toward cleaning up the area and making habitat possible for piping plovers and all kinds of good stuff. The St. Louis River Alliance and the St. Louis River Area of Concern has a group of folks that are coordinating and advising, and part of that group is Melissa Scholand. She is with the Minnesota DNR, and she joins us this morning on the phone. Hey, Melissa, nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
The Remedial Action Plan is available online, and one of the things that I think is just marvelous about it is that everything that is new or changed is highlighted in red, and most of it is clickable. So you can find out what was changed or added, and if you want to find out a little bit more about it, you can find out a little bit more about that. That is a way, I think, that our wonderful technologies are really making things fabulous for folks.
Exactly. It's a big document, so every year we update it, and we like to try to draw people's eyes and attention to the sections that have changed, because some people like to review this every single year, so it helps them look and see where we've made big updates.
One of the big updates that I noticed, you know, going through and skimming headlines and having looked at the table of contents, and all of a sudden I came across several pages that were all red, and is this idea in Section 3 of the St. Louis River Cultural Corridor. And it talks about the cultural corridor known to the native people, the indigenous people who lived here, as a trade route and also a place for wild rice. Talk about the addition of this chunk to the areas of concern, why it's there and why it's important.
Yeah, you know, it's important to add that much-needed historic and cultural context to the areas and, you know, to the indigenous groups that, you know, were in the area historically and are here now, and to help, yeah, make that connections more to the historical and cultural context. You know, after some consultations with tribes, we decided that it's really important to add that. And so we worked with the Fond du Lac Band of Lake Superior, Chippewa, to have that section inserted.
There is also some information here that was really interesting. In addition just to the interesting history, there was also some interesting information about current efforts underway to restore wild rice habitat, and how there are five wild rice producing water bodies in this area. And of course, many people are still taking advantage of those today. Is that an area of concern in terms of pollution, in terms of maintaining a habitat that is wild rice friendly?
Yeah, so restoring wild rice habitat is one of the actions we've identified for habitat restoration. So wild rice is kind of finicky in terms of the types of sediment it likes to grow in and depths, and it likes to be in sheltered areas. So we have done an evaluation where we've worked with various tribal and state partners to identify areas where we have a good likelihood of restoring wild rice along the St. Louis River. So these are often little sheltered back bays. So it's been a multi-year process. We put together a restoration plan in 2014. And since then, every year we go back to these areas and we reseed wild rice. Some of the challenges we have been facing, though, are changing water levels and goose depredation. So the geese like to swoop in and eat this rice as soon as it pops out of the water.
Geese are geese are kind of, they're kind of funny that way. I grew up in a town where we had a population of geese year-round that stayed in this wonderful, nice, warm water. And geese in town are a problem. Geese in agricultural areas are a problem. And I really like geese, but they are certainly challenging. What kinds of information? One of the other things that we've been hearing a lot about is how many Indigenous people have traditional knowledge, passed down knowledge about taking care of the environment and about handling, some of these challenges, like two gall darn many geese, and that there is a large pool of wisdom there that up until now has been largely untapped. Is that what you're also finding?
And we do involve folks like the Fond du Lac Band and GLIFWIC, which is the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Group. So that's a good way to pull in that knowledge, especially when it comes to doing the wild rice restoration. And also as we try to incorporate other culturally significant plants into our restoration projects.
As you look at the areas of concern for this year, what are some other changes, corrections, additions that you think are also really significant?
Yeah, so some of the big changes that you can look at every year when we update the RAP is just looking at our progress and our timelines. So our area of concern is kind of broken up into nine basic beneficial use impairments. So these are things that should be happening in the estuary, things like having clean fish and clean habitat, clean sediments. If those uses aren't being met, we've identified them and put together a big list of projects and research and monitoring activities that we think need to be done to help improve those. So every year you can see, what have we gotten done this year? Have we learned anything that's caused us to change our plan? So we also have kind of an adaptive approach where we look and see what we've done, what have we learned, and do we need to change? So those are the things that you can see highlighted in red. Every year we've been having great successes to report.
It's really encouraging to have modeled for us as human beings the idea that you can learn new things and adapt to those new things, and that you don't have to be necessarily stuck in a system that doesn't really work well for you. I think maybe if we see more of that being modeled for us, it will be easier for us to ask that of the systems and the institutions in our own life, and kind of expect that as consumers a little bit going forward.
Exactly, because, you know, these ecosystems are so complex. And, you know, at any one point in time, we can't think that we've got it all figured out and we know exactly what to do. So we've set forth these plans, and, you know, every year this is kind of the time we take stock of what have we accomplished and what have we learned and what's the best way to move forward successfully.
One of the projects up here that has involved people quite a bit, first of all, because we have a lot of people that are concerned about the environment. There are a lot of birders up here. And secondly, because baby plovers, anyone who's ever seen a photograph of a baby plover knows exactly why people want to take care of it and help it manage. How is the piping plover restoration working as we continue to try to improve habitat and also to just give the birds during their nesting and their nesting season, and when they're raising their chicks and incubating their eggs, a break from human incursion?
Yeah, so when we look at restoring their habitat, yeah, it's kind of a multi-tiered approach. So first we have to create a habitat that's friendly to them. They're adorable birds, but they're a little bit finicky about where they like to nest or hang out. So getting the right types of substrates. You can't have too many perching areas where a raptor may perch, so you have to have low vegetation. But then, like you said, there's also this disturbance component, too. So you can make this habitat, but then you also have to protect it, especially during those nesting seasons. So keeping users out, keeping dogs away, and things like that. So you really have to look at this effort from lots of different angles to make it successful. And yeah, we've had recent efforts to make that habitat great. We're feeling really good about what this next year's nesting season might bring.
As you look at some of these projects, especially where they impact the public or where you're asking citizen scientists to help out with things, either habitat restoration or, you know, maybe monitoring the piping plover areas to keep, you know, people and dogs away, wherever you're able to use citizen scientists or just plain old volunteers or people that are passionate about the mission, do you find that social media is helping? I'm thinking about, you know, the technology that allows this areas of concern to be so easy to understand and to get information about. I've seen a little bit, I guess, of social media really encouraging people to get involved, to care about things. A little bit of, I've seen, it's been fairly gentle what I've seen. Maybe I haven't seen so much. Some gentle policing about, hey, somebody was down there with a dog today. Don't do that. Is getting our, do you have tools available to you now to get people engaged and invested and involved in a way that you didn't have before?
Definitely. I think the social media is a great way to get information out really quick and to target user groups that already care about the river or that you think may care about it. So using social media and then also using on-the-ground things like signage to make people aware of the work that we're doing. Because the work that we do associated with the area of concern isn't always super visible. So we do a lot of work that's underwater, repairing habitat or remediating contaminated sediments. So we're always trying to think about how we can engage and educate people as to the work that we're doing, because once the work is done, we want to make sure people continue to be stewards of the resource. And, you know, ultimately, we want to have our community really embrace the resource, because for many years, people didn't. The river was dirty. It wasn't a place to recreate or fish. But now that's really shifting. And so we invest a lot of time and money into doing this work, and we really hope that it can come full circle to have people return to the river and really revitalize the community.
And people just need to know what's going on. Melissa, thank you so very much for taking some time to talk with us this morning.
Yes, I'm always happy to.
We will.
Thanks
get
for having me.
You bet. And we'll get some links set up, of course, to the Remedial Action Plan and some other links that'll help folks find more information about the project. So you can look for that on our website at kumd.org. Green Visions on KUMD is made possible with support from the Minnesota Power Energy Conservation Program, making progress toward a lower carbon energy future.